Chapter 11. The Cosmic Vision. Arjuna, out of compassion, you have taught me the supreme mystery of the self. Through your words, my delusion is gone. You have explained the origin and end of every creature, O lotus-eyed one, and told me of your own supreme, limitless existence. Just as you have described your infinite glory, O Lord, now I long to see it. I want to see you as the supreme ruler of creation. O Lord, Master of Yoga, if you think me strong enough to behold it, show me your immortal self. Krishna, behold, Arjuna, a million divine forms with an infinite variety of color and shape. Behold the gods of the natural world and many more wonders never revealed before. Behold the entire cosmos turning within my body and the other things you desire to see. But these things cannot be seen with your physical eyes. Therefore I will give you spiritual vision to perceive my majestic power. Sanjaya, having spoken these words, Krishna, the master of yoga, revealed to Arjuna his most exalted, lordly form. He appeared with an infinite number of faces, ornamented by heavenly jewels, displaying unending miracles and the countless weapons of his power. Clothed in celestial garments and covered with garlands, sweet-smelling with heavenly fragrances, he showed himself as the infinite Lord, the source of all wonders, whose face is everywhere. If 1,000 suns were to rise in the heavens at the same time, the blaze of their light would resemble the splendor of that supreme spirit. There, within the body of the God of gods, Arjuna saw all the manifold forms of the universe united as one. Filled with amazement, his hair standing on end in ecstasy, he bowed before the Lord with joined palms and spoke these words.
Arjuna, O Lord, I see within your body all the gods and every kind of living creature. I see Brahma, the creator, seated on a lotus. I see the ancient sages and the celestial serpents. I see infinite mouths and arms, stomachs and eyes. And you are embodied in every form. I see you everywhere, without beginning, middle or end. You are the Lord of all creation, and the cosmos is your body. You wear a crown and carry a mace and discus. Your radiance is blinding and immeasurable. I see you, who are so difficult to behold, shining like a fiery sun blazing in every direction. You are the supreme, changeless reality, the one thing to be known. You are the refuge of all creation, the immortal spirit, the eternal guardian of eternal Dharma. You are without beginning, middle, or end. You touch everything with your infinite power. The sun and moon are your eyes, and your mouth is fire. Your radiance warms the cosmos. O Lord, your presence fills the heavens and the earth and reaches in every direction. I see the three worlds trembling before this vision of your wonderful and terrible form. The gods enter your being, some calling out and greeting you in fear. Great saints sing your glory, praying, "May all be well." The multitudes of gods, demigods, and demons are all overwhelmed by the sight of you. O mighty Lord, at the sight of your myriad eyes and mouths, arms and legs, stomachs and fearful teeth, I and the entire universe shake in terror. O Vishnu,
I can see your eyes shining. With open mouth you glitter in an array of colours, and your body touches the sky. I look at you, and my heart trembles. I have lost all courage and all peace of mind. When I see your mouths with their fearful teeth, mouths burning like the fires at the end of time, I forget where I am, and I have no place to go. O Lord, you are the support of the universe. Have mercy on me. I see all the sons of Dhritarashtra. I see Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. I see our warriors and all the kings who are here to fight. All are rushing into your awful jaws. I see some of them crushed by your teeth. As rivers flow into the ocean, all the warriors of this world are passing into your fiery jaws. All creatures rush to their destruction like moths into a flame. You lap the worlds into your burning mouths and swallow them. Filled with your terrible radiance, O Vishnu, the whole of creation bursts into flames. Tell me who you are, O Lord of terrible form. I bow before you. Have mercy. I want to know who you are. You, who existed before all creation. Your nature and workings confound me. Krishna, I am time, the destroyer of all. I have come to consume the world. Even without your participation, all the warriors gathered here will die. Therefore arise, Arjuna. Conquer your enemies and enjoy the glory of sovereignty. I have already slain all these warriors. You will only be my instrument. Bhishma, Drona, Jayadrata, Karna, and many others are already slain. Kill those whom I have killed. Do not hesitate. Fight in this battle, and you will conquer your enemies.
Sanjaya.
Having heard these words, Arjuna trembled in fear. With joined palms he bowed before Krishna and addressed him, stammering.
Arjuna. O Krishna, it is right that the world delights and rejoices in your praise, that all the saints and sages bow down to you, and all evil flees before you to the far corners of the universe. How could they not worship you, O Lord? You are the eternal spirit who existed before Brahma, the creator, and who will never cease to be. Lord of the gods, you are the abode of the universe. Changeless, you are what is and what is not, and beyond the duality of existence and non-existence. You are the first among the gods, the timeless spirit, the resting place of all beings. You are the knower and the thing which is known. You are the final home. With your infinite form you pervade the cosmos. You are Vayu, god of wind, Yama, god of death, Agni, god of fire, Varuna, god of water. You are the moon, and the creator Prajapati, and the great-grandfather of all creatures. I bow before you, and salute you again and again. You are behind me and in front of me. I bow to you on every side. Your power is immeasurable. You pervade everything. You are everything. Sometimes, because we were friends, I rashly said, O Krishna, say friend. Casual, careless remarks. Whatever I may have said lightly, whether we were playing or resting, alone or in company, sitting together or eating, if it was disrespectful, forgive me for it, O Krishna. I did not know the greatness of your nature, unchanging and imperishable. You are the Father of the universe, of the animate and the inanimate. You are the object of all worship, the greatest Guru. There is none to equal you in the three worlds. Who can match your power? O gracious Lord, I prostrate myself before you and ask for your blessing. As a father forgives his son, or a friend, or a lover his beloved, so you should forgive me. I rejoice in seeing you as you have never been seen before. Yet I am filled with fear by this vision of you as the abode of the universe. Please, let me see you again as the shining God of gods. Though you are the embodiment of all creation, let me see you again not with 1,000 arms, but with 4, carrying the mace and discus and wearing a crown. Krishna, Arjuna, through my grace you have been united with me and receive this vision of my radiant, universal form, without beginning or end, which no one else has ever seen. Not by the knowledge of the Vedas, nor sacrifice, nor charity, nor rituals, nor even by severe asceticism, has any other mortal seen what you have seen, O heroic Arjuna. Do not be troubled. Do not fear my terrible form. Let your heart be satisfied and your fears dispelled in looking at me as I was before. Sanjaya. Having spoken these words, the Lord once again assumed the gentle form of Krishna and consoled his devotee who had been so afraid. Arjuna. O Krishna, now that I have seen your gentle human form, my mind is again composed and returned to normal. Krishna. It is extremely difficult to obtain the vision you have had. Even the gods long always to see me in this aspect. Neither knowledge of the Vedas, nor austerity, nor charity, nor sacrifice can bring the vision you have seen. But through unfailing devotion, Arjuna, you can know me, see me, and attain union with me. Those who make me the supreme goal of all their work and act without selfish attachment, who devote themselves to me completely and are free from ill will for any creature, enter into me. Chapter 12. The Way of Love. Arjuna. Of those steadfast devotees who love you, and those who seek you as the eternal, formless reality, who are the more established in yoga? Krishna. Those who set their hearts on me and worship me with unfailing devotion and faith are more established in yoga. As for those who seek the transcendental reality, without name, without form, contemplating the unmanifested, beyond the reach of thought and of feeling, with their senses subdued and mind serene, and striving for the good of all beings, they too will verily come unto me. Yet hazardous and slow is the path to the unrevealed, difficult for physical creatures to tread. But they for whom I am the supreme goal, who do all work renouncing self for me, and meditate on me with single-hearted devotion, these I will swiftly rescue from the fragment cycle of birth and death, for their consciousness has entered into me. Still your mind in me, still your intellect in me, and without doubt you will be united with me forever. If you cannot still your mind in me, learn to do so through the regular practice of meditation.
If you lack the will for such self-discipline,
engage yourself in my work, for selfless service can lead you at last to complete fulfillment.
If you are unable to do even this,
surrender yourself to me, disciplining yourself and renouncing the results of all your actions.
Better indeed is knowledge than mechanical practice. Better than knowledge is meditation.
But better still is surrender of attachment to results, because there follows immediate peace.
That one I love, who is incapable of ill will, who is friendly and compassionate, living beyond the reach of I and mine, and of pleasure and pain, patient, contented, self-controlled, firm in faith, with all their heart and all their mind given to me, with such as these I am in love. Not agitating the world or by it agitated,
they stand above the sway of elation, competition, and fear.
That one is my beloved.
They are detached, pure, efficient, impartial, never anxious, selfless in all their undertakings. They are my devotees, very dear to me.
That one is dear to me who runs not after the pleasant, or away from the painful, grieves not, lusts not, but lets things come and go as they happen. That devotee who looks upon friend and foe with equal regard, who is not buoyed up by praise nor cast down by blame,
alike in heat and cold, pleasure and pain, free from selfish attachments, the same in honour and dishonour, quiet, ever full, in harmony everywhere, firm in faith.
Such a one is dear to me. Those who meditate upon this immortal Dharma, as I have declared it, full of faith, and seeking me as life's supreme goal,
are truly my devotees, and my love for them is very great.
Chapter 13. The Field and the Knower. Krishna.
The body is called a field, Arjuna. The one who knows it is called the knower of the field. This is the knowledge of those who know.
I am the knower of the field in everyone, Arjuna. Knowledge of the field and its knower is true knowledge.
Listen, and I will explain the nature of the field, and how change takes place within it. I will also describe the knower of the field and his power.
These truths have been sung by great sages in a variety of ways, and expounded in precise arguments concerning Brahman.
The field, Arjuna, is made up of the following: the five areas of sense perception, the five elements, the five sense organs, and the five organs of action, the three components of the mind, manas, buddhi, and ahamkara, and the undifferentiated energy from which all these evolved.
In this field arise desire and aversion, pleasure and pain, the body, intelligence, and will. Those who know truly are free from pride and deceit. They are gentle, forgiving, upright, and pure, devoted to their spiritual teacher, filled with inner strength, and self-controlled. Detached from sense objects and self-will, they have learned the painful lesson of separate birth and suffering, old age, disease, and death. free from selfish attachment,
they do not get compulsively entangled, even in home and family. They are even-minded, through good fortune and bad. Their devotion to me is undivided.
Enjoying solitude and not following the crowd, they seek only me. This is true knowledge,
to seek the self as the true end of wisdom always. To seek anything else is ignorance.
I will tell you of the wisdom that leads to immortality,
the beginningless Brahman,
which can be called neither being nor non-being.
It dwells in all, in every hand and foot and head,
in every mouth and eye and ear in the universe. Without senses itself,
it shines through the functioning of the senses.
Completely independent,
it supports all things. Beyond the gunas, it enjoys their play. It is both near and far, both within and without every creature. It moves and is unmoving. In its subtlety, it is beyond comprehension. It is indivisible, yet appears divided in separate creatures. Know it to be the creator, the preserver, and the destroyer.
Dwelling in every heart, it is beyond darkness.
It is called the light of light,
the object and goal of knowledge, and knowledge itself. I have revealed to you the nature of the field, and the meaning and object of true knowledge. Those who are devoted to me, knowing these things, are united with me. Know that Prakriti and Purusha are both without beginning, and that from Prakriti come the gunas and all that changes. Prakriti is the agent, cause and effect of every action, but it is Purusha that seems to experience pleasure and pain. Purusha, resting in Prakriti, witnesses the play of the gunas born of Prakriti. But attachment to the gunas leads a person to be born for good or evil. Within the body, the Supreme Purusha is called the witness, approver, supporter, enjoyer, the Supreme Lord, the highest self. Whoever realizes the true nature of Purusha, Prakriti, and the gunas, whatever path he or she may follow, is not born separate again. Some realize the self within them through the practice of meditation, some by the path of wisdom, and others by selfless service. Others may not know these paths, but hearing and following the instructions of an illumined teacher, they too go beyond death.
Whatever exists, Arjuna, animate or inanimate, is born through the union of the field and its knower.
They alone see truly, who see the Lord the same in every creature,
who see the deathless in the hearts of all that die.
Seeing the same Lord everywhere,
they do not harm themselves or others. Thus they attain the supreme goal.
They alone see truly, who see that all actions are performed by Prakriti, while the self remains unmoved. When they see the variety of creation rooted in that unity and growing out of it, they attain fulfillment in Brahman. This supreme self is without a beginning, undifferentiated, deathless. Though it dwells in the body, Arjuna, it neither acts nor is touched by action.
As Akasha pervades the cosmos but remains unstained, the self can never be tainted, though it dwells in every creature.
As the sun lights up the world, the self dwelling in the field is the source of all light in the field. Those who, with the eye of wisdom, distinguish the field from its knower and the way to freedom from the bondage of Prakriti, attain the supreme goal. Chapter 14. The Forces of Evolution. Krishna.
Let me tell you more about the wisdom that transcends all knowledge, through which the saints and sages attained perfection. Those who rely on this wisdom will be united with me. For them there is neither rebirth nor fear of death. My womb is Prakriti. In that I place the seed. Thus all created things are born. Everything born, Arjuna, comes from the womb of Prakriti, and I am the seed-giving father. It is the three gunas born of Prakriti, sattva, rajas, and tamas, that bind the immortal self to the body. Sattva, pure, luminous, and free from sorrow, binds us with attachment to happiness and wisdom. Rajas is passion, arising from selfish desire and attachment. These bind the self with compulsive action. Tamas, born of ignorance, deludes all creatures through heedlessness, indolence, and sleep. Sattva binds us to happiness, rajas binds us to action. Tamas, distorting our understanding, binds us to delusion. Sattva predominates when rajas and tamas are transformed. Rajas prevails when sattva is weak and tamas overcome. Tamas prevails when rajas and sattva are dormant. When sattva predominates, the light of wisdom shines through every gate of the body. When rajas predominates, a person runs about, pursuing selfish and greedy ends, driven by restlessness and desire. When tamas is dominant, a person lives in darkness, slothful, confused, and easily infatuated. Those dying in the state of sattva attain the pure worlds of the wise. Those dying in rajas are reborn among people driven by work. But those who die in tamas are conceived in the wombs of the ignorant. The fruit of good deeds is pure and sattvic. The fruit of rajas is suffering. The fruit of tamas is ignorance and insensitivity. From sattva comes understanding. From rajas, greed. But the outcome of tamas is confusion, infatuation, and ignorance. Those who live in sattva go upwards. Those in rajas remain where they are. But those immersed in tamas sink downwards. The wise see clearly that all action is the work of the gunas. Knowing that which is above the gunas, they enter into union with me. Going beyond the three gunas which form the body, they leave behind the cycle of birth and death, decrepitude and sorrow, and attain to immortality. Arjuna, what are the characteristics of those who have gone beyond the gunas, O Lord? How do they act? How have they passed beyond the gunas' hold? Krishna, they are unmoved by the harmony of sattva, the activity of rajas, or the delusion of tamas. They feel no aversion when these forces are active, nor do they crave for them when these forces subside. They remain impartial, undisturbed by the actions of the gunas. Knowing that it is the gunas which act, they abide within themselves and do not vacillate. Established within themselves, they are equal in pleasure and pain, praise and blame, kindness and unkindness. Clay, a rock, and gold are the same to them, alike in honor and dishonor, alike to friend and foe. They have given up every selfish pursuit. Such are those who have gone beyond the gunas. By serving me with steadfast love, a man or woman goes beyond the gunas. Such a one is fit for union with Brahman. For I am the support of Brahman, the eternal, the unchanging,
the deathless, the everlasting Dharma, the source of all joy.
Chapter 15. The Supreme Self. Krishna.
Sages speak of the immutable Ashvatthamara tree, with its taproot above and its branches below. On this tree grow the scriptures. Seeing their source, one knows their essence. Nourished by the gunas, the limbs of this tree spread above and below. Sense objects grow on the limbs as buds. The roots hanging down bind us to action in this world. The true form of this tree, its essence, beginning and end, is not perceived on this earth. Cut down this strong-rooted tree with the sharp axe of detachment. Then find the path which does not come back again. Seek that, the first cause, from which the universe came long ago. Not deluded by pride, free from selfish attachment and selfish desire, beyond the duality of pleasure and pain, ever aware of the self, the wise go forward to that eternal goal. Neither the sun, nor the moon, nor fire can add to that light. This is my supreme abode, and those who enter there do not return to separate existence. An eternal part of me enters into the world, assuming the powers of action and perception and a mind made of prakriti. When the divine self enters and leaves a body, it takes these along, as the wind carries a scent from place to place. Using the mind, ears, eyes, nose, and the senses of taste and touch, the self enjoys sense objects. The deluded do not see the self when it leaves the body, or when it dwells within it. They do not see the self enjoying sense objects or acting through the gunas. But they who have the eye of wisdom see. Those who strive resolutely on the path of yoga see the self within. The thoughtless, who strive imperfectly, do not. The brightness of the sun, which lights up the world, the brightness of the moon and of fire, these are my glory. With a drop of my energy, I enter the earth and support all creatures. Through the moon, the vessel of life-giving fluid, I nourish all plants. I enter breathing creatures and dwell within as the life-giving breath. I am the fire in the stomach, which digests all food. Entering into every heart, I give the power to remember and understand. It is I again who take that power away. All the scriptures lead to me. I am their author and their wisdom. In this world, there are two orders of being, the perishable, separate creature, and the changeless spirit. But beyond these, there is another, the Supreme Self, the Eternal Lord, who enters into the entire cosmos and supports it from within. I am that Supreme Self, praised by the scriptures as beyond the changing and the changeless. Those who see in me that Supreme Self see truly. They have found the source of all wisdom, Arjuna, and they worship me with all their heart. I have shared this profound truth with you, Arjuna. Those who understand it will attain wisdom. They will have done that which has to be done.
Chapter 16. Two Paths. Krishna.
Be fearless and pure. Never waver in your determination or your dedication to the spiritual life. Give freely. Be self-controlled, sincere, truthful, loving, and full of the desire to serve. Realize the truth of the scriptures. Learn to be detached and to take joy in renunciation. Do not get angry or harm any living creature, but be compassionate and gentle. Show goodwill to all. Cultivate vigor, patience, will, purity. Avoid malice and pride. Then, Arjuna, you will achieve your divine destiny. Other qualities, Arjuna, make a person more and more inhuman. Hypocrisy, arrogance, conceit, anger, cruelty, ignorance. The divine qualities lead to freedom, the demonic to bondage. But do not grieve, Arjuna. You were born with divine attributes. Some people have divine tendencies, others demonic. I have described the divine at length, Arjuna. Now listen while I describe the demonic. The demonic do things they should avoid, and avoid the things they should do. They have no sense of uprightness, purity, or truth.
There is no God, they say.
No truth, no spiritual law, no moral order. The basis of life is sex. What else can it be? Holding such distorted views, possessing scant discrimination, they become enemies of the world, causing suffering and destruction. Hypocritical, proud, and arrogant, living in delusion and clinging to deluded ideas, insatiable in their desires, they pursue their unclean ends. Although burdened with fears that end only with death, they still maintain with complete assurance gratification of lust is the highest that life can offer. Bound on all sides by scheming and anxiety, driven by anger and greed, they amass by any means they can a hoard of money for the satisfaction of their cravings.
I got this today, they say. Tomorrow I shall get that. This wealth is mine, and that will be mine too. I have destroyed my enemies. I shall destroy others too. Am I not like God? I enjoy what I want. I am successful. I am powerful. I am happy. I am rich and well-born. Who is equal to me? I will perform sacrifices and give gifts and rejoice in my own generosity.
This is how they go on, deluded by ignorance. Bound by their greed and entangled in a web of delusion, whirled about by a fragmented mind, they fall into a dark hell. Self-important, obstinate, swept away by the pride of wealth, they ostentatiously perform sacrifices without any regard for their purpose. Egotistical, violent, arrogant, lustful, angry, envious of everyone, they abuse my presence within their own bodies and in the bodies of others. Life after life, I cast those who are malicious, hateful, cruel, and degraded into the wombs of those with similar demonic natures. Birth after birth, they find themselves with demonic tendencies. Degraded in this way, Arjuna, they fail to reach me, and fall lower still. There are three gates to this self-destructive hell: lust, anger, and greed. Renounce these three. Those who escape from these three gates of darkness, Arjuna, seek what is best and attain life's supreme goal. Others disregard the teachings of the scriptures. Driven by selfish desire, they miss the goal of life, miss even happiness and success. Therefore, let the scriptures be your guide in what to do and what not to do,
understand their teachings,
then act in accordance with them.
Chapter 17. The Power of Faith. Arjuna.
O Krishna, what is the state of those who disregard the scriptures but still worship with faith? Do they act from sattva, rajas, or tamas?
Krishna.
Every creature is born with faith of some kind, either sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. Listen, and I will describe each to you. Our faith conforms to our nature, Arjuna. Human nature is made of faith. A person is what his shraddha is. Those who are sattvic worship the forms of God. Those who are rajasic worship power and wealth. Those who are tamasic worship spirits and ghosts. Some invent harsh penances. Motivated by hypocrisy and egotism, they torture their innocent bodies and me, who dwells within. Blinded by their strength and passion, they act and think like demons. The three kinds of faith express themselves in the habits of those who hold them, in the food they like, the work they do, the disciplines they practice, the gifts they give. Listen, and I will describe their different ways. Sattvic people enjoy food that is mild, tasty, substantial, agreeable, and nourishing. Food that promotes health, strength, cheerfulness, and longevity. Rajasic people like food that is salty or bitter, hot, sour, or spicy. Food that promotes pain, discomfort, and disease. Tamasic people like overcooked, stale, leftover, and impure food. Food that has lost its taste and nutritional value. The sattvic perform sacrifices with their entire mind fixed on the purpose of the sacrifice. Without thought of reward, they follow the teachings of the scriptures. The rajasic perform sacrifices for the sake of show and the good it will bring them. The tamasic perform sacrifices ignoring both the letter and the spirit. They omit the proper prayers, the proper offerings, the proper food, and the proper faith. To offer service to the gods, to the good, to the wise, and to your spiritual teacher, purity, honesty, continence, and non-violence. These are the disciplines of the body. To offer soothing words, to speak truly, kindly, and helpfully, and to study the scriptures. These are the disciplines of speech. Calmness, gentleness, silence, self-restraint, and purity. These are the disciplines of the mind. When these three levels of self-discipline are practiced without attachment to the results, but in a spirit of great faith, the sages call this practice sattvic. Disciplines practiced in order to gain respect, honor, or admiration are rajasic. They are undependable and transitory in their effects. Disciplines practiced to gain power over others, or in the confused belief that to torture oneself is spiritual, are tamasic. Giving simply because it is right to give, without thought of return, at a proper time, in proper circumstances, and to a worthy person, is sattvic giving. Giving with regrets or in the expectation of receiving some favor or of getting something in return is rajasic. Giving at an inappropriate time, in inappropriate circumstances, and to an unworthy person without affection or respect is tamasic. Om Tat Sat. These three words represent Brahman, from which come priests and scriptures and sacrifice. Those who follow the Vedas, therefore, always repeat the word Om when offering sacrifices, performing spiritual disciplines, or giving gifts. Those seeking liberation and not any personal benefit add the word Tat when performing these acts of worship, discipline, and charity. Sat means that which is. It also indicates goodness. Therefore, it is used to describe a worthy deed. To be steadfast in self-sacrifice, self-discipline, and giving is sat. To act in accordance with these three is sat as well. But to engage in sacrifice, self-discipline, and giving without good faith is asat, without worth or goodness, either in this life or in the next. Chapter 18. Freedom and Renunciation. Arjuna.
O Krishna, destroyer of evil, please explain to me sannyasa and tyaga, and how one kind of renunciation differs from another.
Krishna. To refrain from selfish acts is one kind of renunciation, called sannyasa. To renounce the fruit of action is another, called tyaga. Among the wise, some say that all action should be renounced as evil. Others say that certain kinds of action, self-sacrifice, giving, and self-discipline, should be continued.
Listen, Arjuna, and I will explain three kinds of tyaga and my conclusions concerning them.
Self-sacrifice, giving, and self-discipline should not be renounced, for they purify the thoughtful. Yet even these, Arjuna, should be performed without desire for selfish rewards. This is essential. To renounce one's responsibilities is not fitting. The wise call such deluded renunciation tamasic. To avoid action from fear of difficulty or physical discomfort is rajasic. There is no reward in such renunciation. But to fulfill your responsibilities, knowing that they are obligatory, while at the same time desiring nothing for yourself, this is sattvic renunciation. Those endowed with sattva clearly understand the meaning of renunciation and do not waver. They are not intimidated by unpleasant work, nor do they seek a job because it is pleasant. As long as one has a body, one cannot renounce action altogether.
True renunciation is giving up all desire for personal reward.
Those who are attached to personal reward will reap the consequences of their actions, some pleasant, some unpleasant, some mixed.
But those who renounce every desire for personal reward go beyond the reach of karma. Listen, Arjuna, and I will explain the five elements necessary for the accomplishment of every action, as taught by the wisdom of Sankhya. The body, the means, the ego, the performance of the act, and the divine will. These are the five factors in all actions, right or wrong, in thought, word, or deed. Those who do not understand this think of themselves as separate agents. With their crude intellects, they fail to see the truth. The person who is free from ego, who has attained purity of heart, though he slays these people, he does not slay and is not bound by his action. Knowledge, the thing to be known, and the knower, these three promote action. The means, the act itself, and the doer, these three are the totality of action. Knowledge, action, and the doer can be described according to the gunas. Listen, and I will explain their distinctions to you. Sattvic knowledge sees the one indestructible being in all beings, the unity underlying the multiplicity of creation. Rajasic knowledge sees all things and all creatures as separate and distinct. Tamasic knowledge, lacking any sense of perspective, sees one small part and mistakes it for the whole. Work performed to fulfill one's obligations, without thought of personal reward or of whether the job is pleasant or unpleasant, is sattvic. Work prompted by selfish desire or self-will, full of stress, is rajasic. Work that is undertaken blindly, without any consideration of consequences, waste, injury to others, or one's own capacities, is tamasic. Sattvic workers are free from egotism and selfish attachments, full of enthusiasm and fortitude in success and failure alike. Rajasic workers have strong personal desires and crave rewards for their actions. Covetous, impure, and destructive, they are easily swept away by fortune, good or bad. Tamasic workers are undisciplined, vulgar, stubborn, deceitful, dishonest, and lazy. They are easily depressed and prone to procrastination. Listen, Arjuna, as I describe the three types of understanding and will. To know when to act and when to refrain from action, what is right action and what is wrong, what brings security and what insecurity, what brings freedom and what bondage, these are the signs of a sattvic intellect. The rajasic intellect confuses right and wrong actions and cannot distinguish what is to be done from what should not be done. The tamasic intellect is shrouded in darkness, utterly reversing right and wrong wherever it turns. The sattvic will, developed through meditation, keeps prana, mind, and senses in vital harmony. The rajasic will, conditioned by selfish desire, pursues wealth, pleasure, and respectability. The tamasic will shows itself in obstinate ignorance, sloth, fear, grief, depression, and conceit. Now listen, Arjuna. There are also three kinds of happiness. By sustained effort, one comes to the end of sorrow. That which seems like poison at first, but tastes like nectar in the end. This is the joy of sattva, born of a mind at peace with itself. Pleasure from the senses seems like nectar at first, but it is bitter as poison in the end. This is the kind of happiness that comes to the rajasic. Those who are tamasic draw their pleasures from sleep, indolence, and intoxication. Both in the beginning and in the end, this happiness is a delusion. No creature, whether born on earth or among the gods in heaven, is free from the conditioning of the three gunas. The different responsibilities found in the social order, distinguishing Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, have their roots in this conditioning. The responsibilities to which Brahmins are born, based on their nature, are self-control, tranquility, purity of heart, patience, humility, learning, austerity, wisdom, and faith. The qualities of Kshatriyas, based on their nature, are courage, strength, fortitude, dexterity, generosity, leadership, and the firm resolve never to retreat from battle. The occupations suitable for Vaishya are agriculture, dairying, and trade. The proper work of a Shudra is service. By devotion to one's own particular duty, everyone can attain perfection. Let me tell you how. By performing one's own work, one worships the Creator who dwells in every creature.
Such worship brings that person to fulfillment.
It is better to perform one's own duties imperfectly than to master the duties of another.
By fulfilling the obligations he is born with, a person never comes to grief. No one should abandon duties because he sees defects in them. Every action, every activity is surrounded by defects, as a fire is surrounded by smoke. One who is free from selfish attachments, who has mastered himself and his passions, attains the supreme perfection of freedom from action.
Listen, and I shall explain now, Arjuna, how one who has attained perfection also attains Brahman, the supreme consummation of wisdom.
Unerring in discrimination, sovereign of the senses and passions, free from the clamour of likes and dislikes, such a one leads a simple, self-reliant life based on meditation, controlling speech, body, and mind.
Free from self-will, aggressiveness, arrogance, anger, and the lust to possess people or things. They are at peace with themselves and others and enter into the unitive state.
United with Brahman,
ever joyful, beyond the reach of desire and sorrow,
they have equal regard for every living creature
and attain supreme devotion to me.
By loving me, they come to know me truly. Then they know my glory and enter into my boundless being. All their acts are performed in my service, and through my grace, they win eternal life.
Make every act an offering to me.
Regard me as your only protector. Relying on interior discipline,
meditate on me always. Remembering me, you shall overcome all difficulties through my grace.
But if you will not heed me in your self-will, nothing will avail you.
If you egotistically say, I will not fight this battle,
your resolve will be useless. Your own nature will drive you into it. Your own karma, born of your own nature, will drive you to do even that which you do not wish to do
because of your delusion.
The Lord dwells in the hearts of all creatures
and whirls them around upon the wheel of Maya.
Run to him for refuge with all your strength, and peace profound will be yours through his grace.
I give you these precious words of wisdom.
Reflect on them, and then do as you choose.
These are the last words I shall speak to you, dear one, for your spiritual fulfillment. You are very dear to me. Be aware of me always. Adore me. Make every act an offering to me, and you shall come to me. This I promise, for you are dear to me.
Abandon all supports and look to me for protection.
I shall purify you from the sins of the past. Do not grieve.
Do not share this wisdom with anyone who lacks in devotion or self-control, lacks the desire to learn, or scoffs at me. Those who teach this supreme mystery of the Gita to all who love me perform the greatest act of love. They will come to me without doubt. No one can render me more devoted service. No one on earth can be more dear to me. Those who meditate on these holy words worship me with wisdom and devotion. Even those who listen to them with faith, free from doubts, will find a happier world where good people dwell.
Have you listened with attention? Are you now free from your doubts and confusion?
Arjuna,
You have dispelled my doubts and delusions, and I understand, through your grace. My faith is firm now, and I will do your will. Sanjaya,
this is the dialogue I heard between Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and Arjuna, the great-hearted son of Pritha. The wonder of it makes my hair stand on end. Through Vyasa's grace, I have heard the supreme secret of spiritual union directly from the Lord of Yoga, Krishna himself. Whenever I remember these wonderful holy words between Krishna and Arjuna, I am filled with joy. And when I remember the breathtaking form of Krishna, I am filled with wonder, and my joy overflows.
Wherever the divine Krishna and the mighty Arjuna are, there will be prosperity, victory, happiness, and sound judgment. Of this, I am sure. You have been listening to The Bhagavad Gita, introduced and translated by Eknath Ishwar, read by Paul Basin. This audio recording is the copyright of the Blue Mountain Center of Meditation, a non-profit organization founded by Eknath Ishwaran in 1961. For more information, please visit our website, www.ishwaran.org. That's www.easwaran.org.